Welcome into the Towel Boys. He is Mike Kamala over at RunRevs.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff over here at Mountain West Connection. And Mike got to see Ike Wamu play. I assume that was the first time you saw him play in person.
First time I've seen him play. I still haven't seen him dunk, but I did get a chance to see him play on Monday night.
Okay, in the Desert Rain Summer League, he played with Jordan Cornish. Daquan Cook apparently lost a tooth or something.
Yeah, I heard it chipped. It's a chipped tooth. Which is even more painful. So bad luck for him.
Yeah, that seems. I can't even. No, that seems awful.
I've actually had it before. I took a baseball in the mouth.
Okay.
When your tooth breaks in half, it's like those nerves are exposed, and whenever the air hits it,
That seems like one of the worst, I guess you'd say, like minor, even though it might not be that minor, minor injuries you can have.
It's the one time you can't wait to get into the dentist chair. Like when your tooth is broken, you're like, I need to go to the dentist and fix this right now.
How did he do it? Did you like remember seeing him getting hit in the face or something?
He went down the lane and he made a spin move, and I think his defender sort of swiped at the ball, like a vertical swipe. And he hit him in the face, or he made contact with the face. And you could tell, like, right away, he was, like, holding his mouth, and he just, like, walked straight out of the gym.
And then
he was not to be seen again that night.
We'll also talk some NBA draft. Rashad Vaughn, Chris Wood, kind of the same storyline with Vaughn either rising or kind of staying in the mid-20s, and Chris Wood falling out of the first round in a lot of mock drafts, but not all of them. Also, he's having a draft party at Caesar's Palace. That's interesting. Also, the last topic of the show, we're going to talk about UNLV reconsidering their nickname of Rebels and Runnin' Rebels. Harry Reid, U.S. Senator, said that UNLV should reconsider it, and that's coming off the heels of the Confederate flag debates in South Carolina and now in Mississippi as well. So we'll get into that. It probably deserves a lot more preparation than Mike and I have put into it, but we're still going to talk about it. But back to the Desert Rain Summer League. Let's start with Jordan Cornish. He said he lost 15 pounds. Does he look like he lost 15?
Yeah. So when he started playing, you noticed it. He just looks a little trimmer, a lot in the lower body, and he looked slimmer. It's tough to tell how much it impacted on the court because it's not like the highest level of competition. Though you know they're not really going that hard, but you could tell he looked a little slimmer.
Okay, you say it's not the highest level of competition. How many teams at the Desert Rain Summer League would beat San Jose State?
I think that they would give them a run for their money. Like most of the teams have like legit college players, like the.
And San Jose State doesn't.
They have legit college football players on that team.
Okay. First thing, Jordan Cornish, I guess he said he cut fried foods from his diet, which is very impressive considering he went back home to Louisiana for some time before coming back to Las Vegas. It can be difficult to do, cut fried foods when you're in Louisiana. That might sometimes be your only option. He might have gone hungry. Yeah. It's possible.
I asked him what changes he made, and he was like, no fried foods, no fast food, no pasta. And the things he was ticking off was just my diet, like everything that I eat.
You instantly felt terrible about yourself.
Yeah, he just named all the things that I eat, the only things that I eat.
Here's the thing, like he couldn't have eaten at Popeyes then, and there's like a Popeyes, you're always within a mile of Popeyes when you're in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So like that's impressive. If he really didn't eat fried foods, like it's probably his biggest accomplishment in life.
Yeah.
Even if he just did it for like 2 months, or not even 2 months, like a month or 2 weeks or something. But let's talk about playing fast.
Which is why he wanted to lose the weight. It sounded like the coaches, they wanted him to slim down and get a little trimmer so that they could play this up-tempo run and rebel style of basketball.
So we think it's for real then, right? If Jordan Cornish like altered his diet, like it's got to be real, right?
I would say that going into last season, they backed off that talk because they knew that they weren't going to be able to do it. They did not plan to be a running team. They didn't plan to be like a fast tempo team. So they didn't push that narrative in the off season, like Rice as opposed to his first couple of years on the job, he wasn't saying, you know, we want to be a running team and we're going to get back to that and we're going to be up and down. He wasn't saying that last year, and they ended up, you know, not playing that. They ended up playing like a slower pace. So I would assume that if they were going to continue to, you know, walk the ball up and play half court defense, that they would have. I don't see why they would come out and start saying this. Like Rice is, you know, he's mentioned that in a couple other interviews that I've seen. He mentioned it to me when I talked to him a few weeks ago, that, you know, they want to, you know, get back to trying to be an up-tempo team. If they were going to continue to play the half-court style that they played last year, I don't understand why they would start putting this out there and start trying to get that word out. So I think it's got to be for real. Now you're seeing like tangible evidence of them actually doing something about it, which is having Jordan Cornish lose weight and get a little lighter. So I would say now all signs sort of point to them actually giving it a shot.
All right, so here's some numbers for you in Dave Rice's tenure. His first year at UNLV, they were seventh in the country in terms of average fastest possession.
That's fast.
At 15 seconds.
That's fast.
They went from 7th to 20th.
Still kind of fast.
To 104th.
Not so fast.
Last year they were 225th. It was the first time that a Dave Rice coach team was under the was longer than the Division I average for a possession. And so they went from 15 seconds of possession in his first year to 18.8 this past season. Now 3.8 seconds is quite a big deal when you're talking about average possessions in college basketball. Basically, since Rice has been the coach, the D1 average has been right above 18. It was 18.1, 18.0, and 18.4 has been the last 3 years. Now, Ike Wamu has said, and I've heard it from like so many people, like recruits or whatever, transfers that have like, they like UNLV's up-tempo style of play. And I just told you they were 225th in the country in terms of how fast they played. How selective of the editing is UNLV doing when they show video to these guys?
I think that...
That's very specific video editing.
I think that reputation counts for a lot. Like, judging by his first 2 years, I think we know that Rice can have his team play at a fast pace if they choose to do it. I'm willing to give them last year because, you know, they're playing five true freshmen in the rotation. So it's only natural that you're probably going to want to slow things down a little bit for those guys. So I'm willing to give them a pass on 2014-15. So I think that now that they've got sort of a core to build on and some guys who have been there for a couple of years now, who have been in place, in a much deeper team this year than they had last year, I think it's reasonable to expect that you could see them closer to being seventh in the country than being 225th again.
All right. I've said this before. I think last year's team would have been better off trying to play faster, even given their depth issues and defensive issues. And I think this year's team would be better off trying to play faster. I've said I think Pat McCall would just be an absolute star if UNLV does play up-tempo, because I think defensively and offensively his game just fits that perfectly. I think he can do everything he does well would fit into that. But if you take the last 3 years under Dave Rice and you look at how fast they've played versus how efficient they've been in transition, basically the slower they play, the more efficient they are in transition. In that 2012-13 season, so Dave Rice's second year, they were 20th in how long their average possession was, but they were 294th in transition efficiency. They were scoring less than a point per possession in transition. Like, that's really hard to do. Then the next year, when they were 104th in terms of how long their possessions were, they were 129th in transition efficiency. Then this past season, when they played their slowest ever, they were 18th in transition efficiency. Now, that's 3 years where when UNLV plays slower, their transition efficiency goes up. So does that make you say, maybe playing faster just means they're going to be sloppier or they're not going to be as efficient in transition because they're going to have to do more in transition. Does that make you question at all, like, hey, maybe playing faster, they're not going to continue to be that efficient in the, on the fast break?
It does, because, you know, if you're playing in transition, you sort of, you're looking for that first shot, which is not always going to be your best shot. I mean, a lot of times it will be. But not every transition opportunity is created equal. So you're going to have better, sometimes you're going to have better chances than others. I don't know if that is a large enough sample for me to say, like, that playing slower is, makes you a better transition team. I'm not really sure how to digest that. I think a lot of it has to do with the personnel and how committed they are to the running game. As I said before, they've talked about, you know, playing pressure defense in the past, but it's how committed to it are you going to be? So I think all of that factors in. I'm not ready to say that slower is better when it comes to transition, but it's something to think about. What do you think? How do you interpret that? Do you want them to play, you know, keep their foot on the gas, like just running it down every time and taking the first shot that they see?
I still do. I still think they'd be better off doing that. And I think the main reason is for next year is because of the roster that they have. They only have three true post players. I mean, we're going to see Dwayne Morgan or Derek Jones or maybe, I mean, Pat McCoff or Jordan Cornish potentially. I mean, you're going to see some of these wing players playing the four and probably playing it a lot, especially if there's any injury, any foul trouble, any hiccups to growth and development or talent along those front line of those three guys. So you're going to see a Dwayne Morgan at the four a lot, or you're going to see Derek Jones or whoever it is. You're going to see somebody there that's not a traditional four. And to me, that says, okay, we should run, and we should run and look for layups or threes. Like, that's what we should go for. Pat McCaw is going to throw an alley-oop every time. But I look at this team and Pat McCaw, Ike Wamu, and Steven Zimmerman, I think, are going to be your three best players. And I feel like all three of them would be at their best if you have a team that's pushing the ball up the floor constantly.
I would agree with that. My biggest thing is being committed to it. If the results are not going to be there the first time you run, they'll be there in the second half. And when you start using your, you know, 10, 12 deep rotation to start wearing teams down, and when you continually push over 40 minutes and then for an entire season. So, like, I'm okay with, if they want to be, if they want to go back to being an up-tempo team, it may not be the very most efficient offense they can run, but I think if you commit to it, you can make it effective with the players that they have.
Who on this team doesn't fit that up-tempo style? Like, I don't think there's anybody that sticks out like a sore thumb that, like, you can't run with that guy.
Yeah, I don't think they have any plotters, any guys that can't keep up. The guys that we haven't seen, like Jones and Poyser, those guys are all, you know, the scouting reports say that, you know, they've got the athleticism and they can run and they can play in the open court. So, I mean, the person, and it's a much deeper team than last year as well. So it seems like if they want to do it and they want to commit to it, they'll have the guys to do it.
All right. Moving on to the NBA draft. It is on Thursday. Basically, you've got two UNLV guys that are going to get drafted. But if you look at mock drafts, and if you believe mock drafts at all, Rashad Vaughn is a lock for the first round. Like, do you feel that way, that Rashad Vaughn's going to be taken in the first round?
It seems like it. Every mock draft I've seen, everyone that I've talked to, not that I have a ton of NBA sources, but everyone that I've talked to has seemed to say that, like, yeah, he's working out well and he's showing pretty well. The biggest thing is that I've heard from a couple people that he looks really healthy, like that he looks healthier than he did even before he got hurt, like for UNLV. They're saying that he looks quicker, he's trimmer, he's jumping higher. So during the season, you know, the biggest knock on him, I think, from the scouting world was that he didn't have that elite NBA, like, super athleticism. And he's still not, you know, a Russell Westbrook type athlete, but he's better than he showed on the court for UNLV last year, now that he's had some time to let his knees heal and he's spent time, you know, working out. And it seems like that has sort of solidified him in that late teens, early 20s range.
the more, I guess, interesting thing right now is Chris Wood falling. He is, Draft Express has him at 46th till Milwaukee. I mean, like, that's the last 15 picks of the draft. Like, you're, if you're the 45th projected guy, there's a chance you couldn't get taken. Now, lots of other places still have him in the first round. Lots of other places still have him in that 25, 27, 28 range. But I think I might have asked you this last show, but, like, it is Chris Wood's work ethic, like, is that what could be causing the drop, that he's going to these workouts and it's just, like, teams are noticing, like, hey, he's not giving quite the same effort as everybody
else? That's the only thing it could be. He's a guy that, you know, the issue is that if you draft Chris Wood, you know he's got to put on a certain amount of muscle to play at the NBA level. If he wants to, he's got to put on, you know, whatever it is, 20, 25 pounds of muscle. And then the problem is he declares for the draft and he's got a couple months to work out and get ready for it because he knows the NBA scouting combine is coming up. So he's got a couple months to dedicate himself and really get ready for it. And then he shows up at the combine and he has the second worst body fat percentage at the combine. And he's not, you know, overweight in terms of he's not a fat guy. He's skinny, but there's just no muscle. There's no muscle there. So it's, if you draft him, do you trust that he had 2 months to get ready for it? It looks like he didn't take it seriously. So if you draft him, are you confident that he's going to put in the work to put on that 25 pounds of muscle that he needs just to keep his foot in the league? I don't know if I'd be confident about that.
So if you look at some of the different mock drafts, CBS Sports, they've got three different guys that do a mock draft for them, and they all have Vaughn and Wood going in the first round. I think it's Gary Parrish has Rashad Vaughn going as high as 22 to Chicago, and then one of them has Chris Wood going 30th, so the last pick in the first round, to Golden State. NBA DraftNet actually has Rashad Vaughn at 17 to Milwaukee, which is by far the highest I've seen him projected. They have Chris Wood in the second round at 37. Draft Express, as I said, Chris Wood is 46. Vaughn is 26. And then Bleacher Report is 25 and Vaughn 27. Those are all of the mock drafts I found in about 30 minutes worth of work that either A, let me see them for free, or B, didn't make me click through a slideshow. Like, there were so many websites that were, and it wasn't Bleacher Report. Bleacher Report had one where it just listed it out. There were so many websites where it was like I was going to have to click 30 times to see the whole mock draft, and I just wasn't going to do that. But those, I think it was six total mock drafts there. Rashad Vaughn's average 24 and Chris Wood's average 33. So at this point, I mean, at what pick in the draft will you be surprised that Chris Wood has not been taken?
I think if you get after the first handful of picks in the second round, if you start to get up to 35, 36, and he hasn't been taken, it seems like a 6'11" guy with his athleticism and his production in college should have gone by now.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think if he doesn't go in the first round, it's not a big issue or anything. It will be money-wise in terms of signing bonus in the first contract for him. But, yeah, I think once you get in the second round and the back end of that, a lot of those teams might start taking international guys that they're not going to bring over right away. I mean, that's what the Spurs will do. The Sixers did that with what's his name? Dario Saric, is that right? Who's still over in Europe, and they're still getting a lot of crap over that. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll see, they did that with like a top 10 pick, though.
Yeah.
But you'll see European guys go that aren't going to play in the next 2 years.
They don't want to pay guaranteed money to players that aren't going to help them this year or next year. So they'll look for players that they can stash for a couple years and not have to pay right away.
So Chris Wood could be the 32nd best player in the draft, but if we get to pick 42 and he hasn't been taken, things can start it's not Major League Baseball draft where there's 50 rounds and everybody gets drafted. Like, even guys that haven't played baseball since they were 12 and just happen to be really athletic. Like, it could get dangerous for him if he doesn't get drafted. And Like, if how big of an ego blow would that be to him?
Well, you might have to ask the people that attend his draft party on Thursday night. I still got to think I still think he's got to end up somewhere in the first. Like, NBA GMs and scouts, you know, they can talk about work ethic all they want, but in the end, it's like, he's got the size, he's athletic. Like, they don't pass on that. Like,
somebody's going to say, can work with this kid. Yeah. I don't know. I think I agree with that, but I don't know if I say, what is Chris Wood going to be in the NBA? I don't think you really know right now. And if I asked you, what's Rashad Vaughn going to be? I think you can say, like, he can come in and he can end up being a scorer for you. He might not be your leading scorer at any point in his career, but he can come off the bench and be a good scoring sixth man for, you know, a couple years in the NBA. Like, I can say that about Rashad Vaughn. I don't know what Chris Wood is because I don't think he's that great defensively, and I don't know what he's going to do offensively in the NBA right now. Now, in 5 years, he could develop a lot of stuff. He could go a lot of different ways, but I just don't know what he's going to be. So I think, you know, maybe other teams just say, you know, we're going to take something we're a little bit more certain with. His watch party for the NBA draft, though, it's Thursday, 4 o'clock, which is what time – okay, the draft starts at 4. Now, I understand the first pick is not going to be right at 4 p.m., but the doors don't open for this at 4. So, like, if you want to go and watch the draft, like, you might miss the first couple picks.
But it's also – he's he's realistic about his chances. He probably doesn't expect to be drafted, you know, something in the first hour of the program. How much time is there between picks in the NBA? What is it, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
God, I hope it's two.
I like when they're stretched out. I like the more time between the picks, but that's just me.
No,
that's just me.
Listen, this thing starts at 4. I wish it was over by like 5 o'clock.
I was a big fan of the NFL draft when it was 15 minutes between first round picks. That was my heaven. But so I assume he's realistic. He knows he's probably not going to go in the first 30, 45 minutes, whatever it is. So you have time to get in there and settle down and do whatever they're doing at this watch party. He's not 21. So, I mean, I'm not sure, like, what is going to be. And the funny thing is I talked to him. I actually caught up with him last week on the phone to do a story. And he said that he wasn't planning to watch the draft at all. Like, he was just going to ignore it and like wait for someone to call him. And then he said he changed his mind. And now he was just going to, you know, stay in and watch it with his family. And then a week later, I guess now it's the plan now is to have a watch party at Caesars open to the public. So it's, I thought it was funny that he went from not even wanting to watch the draft to a week later. Now he's going to have a watch party at Caesars. So maybe he knows something that we don't.
That's just bad reporting by you, Mike. You got to get better sources.
Maybe he knows something that we don't.
And somebody, Jordan Corners retweeted somebody, little picture, nice little graphic of Chris Wood's watch party, and they misspelled Caesars in that two separate ways they misspelled Caesars, which was quite impressive when on their graphic they have the picture of the strip with the Caesar's Palace sign on there. So it's literally right next to it, and it's misspelled pretty badly. Like Caesar's is a word that I do not know how to spell off the top of my head, so I would be sure to look it up and see how to spell it.
Well, as a regular consumer of Little Caesar's brand pizza, I would have no trouble spelling that word, but I do understand how it could be tricky for others. So I'm going to give whoever designed that graphic, I'm going to give them a pass on that misspelling.
No. No, no, you can't give them a pass because, like, you have to get that right.
It doesn't seem like this was pre-planned, right? So it might have been a rush order. It might have been, hey, we've got to get this out. We've got to get this publicized now if we want people to show up. So, hey, we don't have time to spell check every little thing on this flyer. Like, I know there's a squiggly red line that's showing up under Caesars. I don't have time to check and see what that's about. I think people will understand what we're talking about, so let's just print it.
Yeah, whatever. I didn't notice it either until somebody pointed it out to me, so I guess it's not that big of a deal. But, all right, we're going to the bullet points of the show, curling the stash, a lot of stuff. We're going to start with baseball as had the Major League Baseball draft. Brian Bunnell was drafted, and he is signed with the Tampa Bay Rays. Joey Armstrong also drafted and signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Armstrong was UNLV's starting center fielder. Bunnell, a pitcher. Eric Van Meetrin, their starting catcher, undrafted but signed with the Nationals. And Zach Hartman, a pitcher, went undrafted and signed with the Angels. A little bit more interesting story, Joey Loria, who was a pitcher, was drafted in the 25th round by Philadelphia, but he actually rejected that to become a graduate assistant coach for UNLV baseball. So he's actually going to be back in Las Vegas with the team next year as a coach. Also, UNLV baseball, they have a signee who was named the High School Player of the Year by the Salt Lake Tribune newspaper in Salt Lake. He went 10-1 with an 0.97 ERA. He struck out 47% of the batters he faced all season.
That's a good K per nine.
47%, like nearly every other batter he struck out. That's incredible. I don't know how good of competition he was playing, but that's still remarkable. Softball, Gary Blando, who's UNLV softball's best player, she and the Philippines won a gold medal at the Southeast Asian Games in Singapore. Jenny Ruiz, who is a former UNLV women's soccer player, played in all three games for Mexico at the Women's World Cup. She started two of them. She played here at UNLV as a defender from 2001 to 2004. I'm about to give you all of the times announced for the football games that have been announced. At Northern Illinois is going to be at 4:30 p.m. UCLA is at 7:30 p.m. The Fresno State game, which is on Friday, is at 7:30 p.m. San Diego State at 7:30 p.m. The Michigan game, which is at Michigan on the Big Ten Network, is at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Got to be excited for that.
That's a Saturday morning, 9 a.m.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that is tremendous, isn't it?
It's gonna be a fun day.
The Big Ten Network is gonna get so many views from Las Vegas for that game.
You never know if UNLV is off to a hot start and people are fired up about the team.
They're gonna have to beat Northern Illinois or UCLA to be off to a hot start, right?
If UNLV goes to that game 2-0, looking a little frisky. I think people will maybe call it early on Friday night in order to be up for that game at 9 a.m. the next day.
If UNLV does go 2-0, it'll probably be worth it to call it early on Friday night. And the Big Ten Network will probably have a little bit of regret for scheduling that game as their 9 a.m. Pacific game.
I mean, you've been in Las Vegas long enough to know that. No matter, they can put that game on at any time of the day, and there will be a certain section of a certain type of fan who is very interested in the outcome and will stay up to watch it or make themselves available to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm aware. But it's still, it's 9 a.m. Sucks. I'd rather do a football game at 9 a.m. than 9 p.m., but
your problem is you're thinking about this as a digital sports reporter, when if you think about the print media, think about how much time this gives them to make deadline for the next day.
Yeah, no, I don't care. Here's the thing. 9 a.m. is better than 9 p.m., but 9 a.m. is not better than, noon. Noon sounds wonderful. All football games, play them at noon. And then UNLV basketball, a scrimmage on Halloween. Taylor Byrne tweeted this out a while ago that UNLV is going to play USC in a preseason scrimmage. And then Matt Eumanns reported that UNLV is going to play a road game at UC Riverside on December 12th, which I believe gives UNLV four games, three of which are on the road, in a 9-day span or something like that. They right before Christmas, they go to Wichita. Wichita's on the 9th, right? And then it's UC Riverside on the 12th, then they come home to play Arizona State, and then they go to Arizona, all in 9 or 10 days or something like that. So that's going to be...
That's a good stretch.
You got three road games in almost a week, a week and a half. That can get pretty tough, even if one of them is UC Riverside. All right, so let's talk about the... more important, that's probably not the right way to phrase it, but Harry Reid, the U.S. Senator, says that UNLV should reconsider the name Runnin' Rebels. This comes from the debates for South Carolina, who has flown the Confederate flag at their state capitol for quite some time now, and their debates to take that down. Also the state of Mississippi, which has the Confederate flag within its own state flag, debating on changing their state flag. And now Harry Reid is saying that UNLV should reconsider it. Should they?
Should they reconsider it? Yes. In light of everything that's happened and everything that's going on right now, yes, it's fair to say that they should be considering calling their team the Rebels.
I agree.
In my opinion.
I think UNLV has to listen. Like, they have to open their ears and listen and hear, like, okay, what do people actually think about this? Like, we're UNLV, we're in Las Vegas, we don't have a lot to do with slavery or racism or Confederacy, but we are the Rebels, and that name does have the connotation of the Civil War and the South. So I think they do have to listen to what is said, but I think in the end, nothing's going to happen to the name, and I don't think anybody's would really come up with a great argument. I graduated from Ole Miss, who is also the Rebels, but Ole Miss as itself of a school, very, like, tons of historical stuff that have to do with the Civil War, that have to do with slavery and racism, and just a ton of stuff. They've gotten rid of their mascot, introduced a new mascot. They've changed names of roads on campuses that were either alluding to racist things or people that were racist. They've done a lot of stuff to try to fight that, and they're still the Rebels. They're probably never going to change that because it's not – because you can be the Rebels, and it's not necessarily a direct correlation to the Civil War. But I think when you look at it from UNLV's standpoint, there's no real direct tie back to the Civil War. There is – I know they had – I guess so. The way I understand it, from what I've read since I've been here, is when UNLV was founded, they were a branch of UNR, and they didn't like that, and they had to fight that, and they had to rebel that, or at least that's what the story is told as of now.
That's the retcon narrative that they're probably going with.
And at some point, they had their wolf mascot who wore a Confederate soldier's outfit. And they've done away with that since, for whatever reason, at some point they adopted Confederate symbols to represent them as the Rebels. I guess it was, hey, we're rebelling from them. It's a North-South thing. Let's adopt the Confederate symbols. I don't know. Apparently at some point that happened. They have since done away with all of that. I read something from the Las Vegas Sun that said they used to have the Confederate flag on their helmets. I don't actually know if that's true, but that seems a bit much. But I think if you're UNLV, you do, like, there is that one little, that there is that tie-in to the Confederacy that's like, hey, you did use some Confederate symbols, so you can essentially tie it back to it. But in the end, I think if you look at it, you can say, like, we don't really have anything. And I don't think there's anybody that's called, like, this Harry Reid saying it's the first time I've ever heard someone ever say, like, hey, UNLV, your name should be changed. Like, you shouldn't call yourselves the Rebels. Like, that's the first time I've ever heard someone even remotely say, like, I'm offended by this, or someone could be offended by it, so we should change it.
It's really hard to get people to change the name of a team. It's like, it's the last thing that people want to hold on to. They're willing to do anything else. For some reason, people get really attached to the name. As you see, like, with the Washington Redskins, the team is basically a blatant, like, ethnic slur, and they still are, like, holding on to it. And if you're waiting for opposition to rise up against the name Runnin' Rebels, it's probably not going to happen. It's the way the name would have to get changed is if there was a leader at the university who was a very strong and decisive leader who decided that, hey, we don't want this name. It's not good for the university. I'm going to move unilaterally to push this through and change the name, because you're never going to get the popular opinion is never going to be on the side of changing the name. Like people just get attached to it. They're not going to want to change it. If you get someone in charge who wants to do it, then it might happen. But people are just going to cling to it.
Do you think you could ever have an event, some racial event happen at UNLV that could cause it to change?
Something like the frat controversy, where there was a frat doing like the racist chanting. Something like that happened at UNLV. If there was some like group that co-opted the name like rebels or adopted like rebel, like Confederate rebel culture, and then had committed some sort of racial crime or something, I could see it, and then I could see it blowing up into a bigger story. But it would take something really drastic for people to actively want to change the name, I think.
Yeah.
But it's a conversation that they should be having.
Yeah. And I honestly, as far as the name Rebels, I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all, because you can rebel from anything. Like, Rebels is not solely referred to the Civil War, even though it's probably the first thing anybody would think of in this country if you said rebels or rebellion or whatever. It's not solely referred to that. And I don't know how true it was, but UNLV can fall back on, we rebelled against UNR. And that, I mean, that they can fall back on that and say that's what it's about. But even Ole Miss, who has a ton of like racist history, I don't think they should ever have to change the name Rebels. Like, just the name Rebels is not race, like, it's not racist, and I don't think anybody, I don't know, I have never in my time in Mississippi at Ole Miss and here now, I've never heard anyone say they were offended by the name Rebels, the way people say they're offended by, like, the Confederate flag and other stuff that alludes to the Civil War and slavery. So just the name Rebels, I don't think there's any problem with it, and I don't think there'd be any change. I do think it's interesting that Harry Reid said that. Like, what?
Well,
I know nothing about Nevada politics. What would make him say that?
Well, you don't have to know about Nevada politics. You just have to know about politics in general, which is there is a very strong sentiment now against the Confederate flag. So it behooves him to make a statement that, hey, I'm on the good guy's side here. Maybe, and then he knows that will get talked about if he brings that up. So it buys him a little bit of goodwill on the national stage to say something like that.
Yeah, it almost feels unnecessary, right?
A little bit, but I don't know the context in which it was brought up. Maybe a reporter asked him directly, like, hey, what do you think about the UNLV running Rebels? And maybe he just responded by saying that's something we should think about and things.
Don't give context, Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, this guy, he's a jerk. He doesn't know what he's talking about. we should all vote against him in the next election.
Okay. So at the end of the show here, where one of us gets to complain about something that annoys us, and I am taking the annoyance baton today. I don't know whose turn it is. We haven't done this in a while. I think Mike was upset with me for not doing one in a while. Were you, Mike?
Yeah, I actually have an annoyance. I'm going to jump in front of you in line. Something that annoys me is it's when grown men celebrate their birthday to the extent that they can't do a podcast on that day.
At a certain point,
you know, why are you still celebrating your birthday? Happy birthday, by the way. For our listeners, it was Tyler's birthday over the weekend.
Which, it was my birthday on Monday.
Which precluded him from recording a podcast, because apparently he had to get a cake and have a party and have a magician and have all his friends over. And
I don't really like cake.
But you still how did you celebrate your birthday?
Well, my girlfriend was nice enough to buy us two nights at SLS.
Oh, a little staycation.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, I don't know. She got some discount in her email. I don't know where she got it, but some discount. So we stayed there for two nights, had a $125 alcohol comp, which was nice.
Oh, dude, that would I think that would have been an entertaining podcast. You with $125 worth of alcohol in you, she could have come on as a guest caster.
I don't think so. Oh. I don't think it would have worked very well.
Okay. Well, on to your annoyance then.
But but my actual birthday was Monday, and the reason I couldn't do it Monday was because we were celebrating Father's Day with her dad, since on actual Father's Day we weren't anywhere to be found.
Okay.
So calm down, Mike.
Okay. I'm just saying, I haven't celebrated my birthday in a long time. I'm a grown man. Like, I've that
You haven't celebrated it. Like, you haven't done anything like, remotely special on your birthday.
No,
ever.
Not real. Like, birthdays are for kids, and, like, I don't know. I have no desire to draw. Birthdays are for kids. I have no desire to draw attention to, like, how old I'm getting, or it just ceases to be a special day at some point. It's just the anniversary of the day that you happen to be born. Like, it really can be any day.
It's it can be.
It's a completely random day.
No, the idea of celebrating birthdays is very kind of pointless, but it's whatever. Like, I get treated special because it's my birthday. So I'm not going to not do that just because you are afraid of getting old.
I guess.
I mean, that's just how it's going to be.
Next time my birthday comes around, I will be available to record a podcast. That's all I'm saying.
All right. When's your birthday? I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to put a reminder in my phone. All right. My annoyance. I got a couple different things, basically all about Twitter and how journalists use Twitter. First thing, I'm going to complain before it happens, and that's about Adrian Wojnarowski tweeting draft picks, two picks before the draft on Thursday. That's just going to annoy me as it is. I hate that so much.
Your annoyance is something that journalists do on Twitter. Is it something that I've done in the past that you've noticed? I hope not. I hope I don't get burned by this pet peeve of yours.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, you might have done it like once, but it's not, none of these are habits of yours. All right. So I don't like it when beat writers don't tweet out links to their like stories or podcasts or videos or whatever the hell they do. Like if you create something to be consumed and you don't tweet it, I don't understand why you have a Twitter. I don't get it, because here's my situation. I lived in Mississippi most of my life. Now I live in Las Vegas. My pro sports teams are all over the place. I'm an Indiana Pacers fan, Colorado Avalanche, Green Bay Packers, Houston Astros. Like didn't live anywhere close in Mississippi or Las Vegas to any of my pro sports teams that I follow. The only reason I follow those beat writers is to stay informed with the team, and when they don't tweet out their links that they write, it's very annoying because it's like, why the hell am I following you? I'm following you to read these stories, and so I know when you tweet them, and if you're not going to tweet them, what the hell's the point? Like, the whole point of me following them is, hey, I don't have to go Google it and search for it to find whatever you wrote about it. I can just have it pop up and I can click on it right there and read it. So that's my first thing. Mm-hmm. Like if you create something, like tweet a freaking link to it. The second thing is journalists who tweet like breaking stories or just big news, and they don't like do it with a link to a story. Like when there's like if a journalist like has a source who gives them breaking news and they tweet it as soon as they can and then they go write their story, that's just stupid. Because who are you helping when you do that? Twitter. Like, you don't get paid for that tweet. Your employer doesn't get paid for that tweet. Your employer makes money by your story being on their website and people click on it and there's ads. Like, that's how your employer gets paid, therefore that's how you get paid. And for you to just tweet out the breaking news and just give it to everybody with no ad revenue or anything coming in is really stupid. Like, it's really dumb to do that. And the best thing is, because SB Nation does this, CBS Sports does, like, I think all media outlets pretty much do it now, is basically aggregate news. And, like, somebody breaks a story and somebody for all these websites will go and pull that tweet or pull their story, and they'll post, it'll be reports, colon, and whatever the story is. What's funny is if somebody tweets out breaking news, and then if they take their time to write the story, SB Nation will have a post on it, embed their tweet before they even get their story up. Mm-hmm. It's just so stupid. Like, I guess I appreciate it if I'm going to aggregate news, but you're like, what are you doing if you do that? I don't understand.
Well, not to get too inside journalism, but I think that when you're tweeting breaking news, it's helping your personal brand. Like, you want to be,
it is.
You want to brand yourself as the guy who breaks news. And I think a lot of people get, when you've got breaking news and you think that it's not going to last very long,
you get excited
and you start to think, is this going to stay a secret for the next 30 minutes while I write this story and post it and get it through the editorial process and actually get it up and then tweet it out? Or is someone else going to jump in and undercut me And in that 30 minutes while I'm working on the story, will someone else get the news and then tweet it out and then beat me to it?
I understand that thought process, but to me it's still dumb just because you don't get paid for your tweet. Like Woj isn't making any money when he tweets out who the 76ers draft like 20 minutes before they actually draft him, right?
No, but I think that if you're a reporter on that level, your thinking is, if I become known as a guy who gets news before anyone else, when my contract is up, this will help me make more money at whatever my next job is. Like, if I can say that, hey, I've developed this reputation and I've cultivated this following where I have X number of Twitter followers because I get the news first and I tweet it out first, that's where my value comes from. And you can say, like, oh, so what value will that provide to his employer or these prospective employers if his entire value is tied to being on Twitter? But I just think that in their minds, it helps their own personal brand.
I understand that. I just still think it's really dumb to just – because you don't get the money from Twitter. Like, Twitter's not paying you. And I – as far as – like, to me – Adrian Wojnarowski is literally known for tweeting breaking news. And sometimes he tweets breaking news without a link. Sometimes he writes the story and then tweets it. But that is what he's known for. Who else in sports journalism is known for that? Like, who else can you say that guy breaks news all the time?
I think that Adam Schefter for the NFL and Wojnarowski for basketball. I'm not sure if baseball has one single guy like that, but those would be the two guys that immediately come to mind who seem to be like balanced and more focused on the news than on, you know, appeasing their sources.
And I'm sure in individual beats with different teams, like there are probably beat writers who are known for, oh, that guy's going to break the news. But don't you have to be on Woj's level for it to really affect your personal brand? Like, don't you have to be the guy for, like, you have to be well known for that, and, like, there's only a handful of guys that can even get to that level for it to actually impact your personal brand? Like, because if you're just sitting back breaking news on, like, literally any college beat, like, how many people are going to notice that? Like, not a ton, right?
But enough to, everyone wants to carve out their own niche, so I mean... Like, if you look at, just for example, we all work, you know, we're beat writers for UNLV basketball, and there's, you know, a handful of jobs that do that in this city. So would you rather be the guy who breaks everything first or not be the guy who breaks everything first? I think in that case, if the opportunity was there, most people you'd want to break the news first if you had the chance. So
yeah, I've never been in a situation where I've had this breaking news and I haven't experienced, oh, I got to tweet this or write a story, but I have pretty good strong conviction in this that I would write the story first and take the risk of you or Taylor Byrne or Matt Eumanns tweeting it out before I finish the story.
Well, I'll tell you, I think I have broken your rule at times, and I can also say that from experience there have been times when I've had the story and I've waited to write the story and gotten scooped in the meantime. Like, that's happened to me. So looking back in retrospect, would I have rather tweeted it out first as breaking news and then gone on to write the story? Probably. Like, I don't know if that puts me in the wrong, but for those, you know, those times when it happened, I would rather have been like first and then followed it up with the story than, you know, sat back and worked on it and let someone else come in and, you know, get the story before I did.
Let me ask you this, because for Mountain West Connection, the editorial process is basically me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have an editor, but I can publish on my own. So essentially, if I were to break news, I could potentially post a 200-word story that's literally like, I mean, what a couple tweets would say. I could post that and then, like, come back and work on it more to fill it out. But I could post that and get a link out there. And I feel like I could do that in like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or whatever.
You can.
And And I kind of say that because I don't know what your editorial processing is. I don't know what I'm sure, you know, the Sun and the Review Journal have a little bit more than what I have, since it's just me saying, okay, I'm going to publish this now. But I don't, like, and maybe it has to be sent to an editor, and that obviously makes the timing much longer. But I don't know. It's just it's foolish, I think, to, because you're giving Twitter money is what you're doing. Like, you're making Twitter more important than yourself.
Which is true. But then it would have been nice to be able to say, like, hey, I had that story first.
Well, you did. You posted the link first.
But, you know, I can see your point. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not as disciplined a journalist. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe that's one of my flaws.
But disciplined journalist.
I've been there. You get excited when you've got a story. You feel like, hey, it's an exciting moment. Not that, like, my breaking news is not an ordinary part of my job. Like, I don't really stick my toe in there very much. That's more of, like, the newspapers, those full-time beat guys. That's more up their alley. I tend to focus more on analysis, as I think you do as well. But when breaking news happens, from time to time, you will come upon breaking news, and it's nice to be first.
Yeah, I also, like, don't have any sources. I'm kind of useless. Probably shouldn't say that if I want to get, like, hired real job. But yeah, you can say I am faking it until I make it at the moment. I mean, I can call the SID and ask them something, but that's about as far as my sources go. But I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I just always think it's dumb, because the thing, like, seriously, with SB Nation, they have positions called news desk positions where you're the news desk position for their NBA site or MLB or whatever, and you have a four-hour shift, and you literally just sit on Twitter, and when somebody tweets out a story, you go grab their tweet, you embed it, and you add maybe your own thought to it or something that it means in the future, and you post it. And when you tweet it out without a link, you're, like, I guarantee the aggregator's probably going to beat you to posting an actual link back to their publisher's website. So I just, to me, it feels like you lose when you do that.
I can't disagree with you.
So, okay. That was my complaint. We went from racism and rebels to
a much more important topic, which
much
is
more important
tweeting out
journalists
news.
Which actually has had more impact on my life in the past year, 5 years, than racist rebels have, so maybe it is more important. But anyway, he is Mike Grimala over at runrebs.com. Mike, what is your Twitter handle?
At Mike Grimala.
Okay, you have your own name. Okay, yeah, apparently there's like four other Tyler Bischoffs, and somebody beat me to it. So
you can all follow at runrebs if you
so should choose. We, though? Aren't they just kind of repeats of what you tweet?
No, it tweets out mostly. I break the first rule that you had, where I'm, as a beat writer, I don't always tweet out links to what I write. So if you want to get all the links, like, at runrebs tweets out all the links and stuff, and then I sort of add more of my own thoughts on Twitter. I'm not super active on Twitter. I try to be, but that's where you can follow me.
I
will start tweeting out links more often. As soon as we finish recording this, I'm going to tweet out a link about, you can read my Jordan Cornish story about his diet.
God, you mentioned body fat at one point. That's body fat and weight loss. God, those are some of the stupidest off-season stories ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I hate those. Like, those are so much like, oh, we have nothing else to talk about, but Jordan Cornish lost 15 pounds. I hate it so much.
And in the,
like, just kill it.
And the funny, it, literally, while I was writing that story, someone brought eclairs into the office. So while I was writing that story, I was just chowing down on eclairs.
It is funny that, like, the stereotype of a sports writer is terrible diet, and you're going to get fat if you keep doing this your whole life, and you cover athletes that are like, yeah, I just stopped eating fried foods.
Yeah. Like, when,
like how many people that cover UNLV sports could you imagine just be like, yeah, I stopped eating fried foods. No big deal.
I would starve to death. I would literally starve to death. If I stopped eating everything that Jordan Cornish stopped eating, I would starve.
You got to, like, fry up some onions or something.
I don't do onions.
Yeah, I don't really like onions either.
But, you know, I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna try that, the Jordan Cornish diet, for one day, and I'll report back to you on the next podcast.
You're gonna hold off on Little Caesars for a whole day?
Yeah, I think the leftovers that I have in my refrigerator will, I think they can hold on for a couple more days. So I'll pass for tomorrow, and then I'll come back to it. I'll let you know how it goes.
He's Mike Grimala over at runrebs.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff here at Mountain West Connection. Thanks for listening to the Talent Boys.